continue our 2015 position previews with second base. Adam Azer here in New York City on Tuesday, February 17th, joined by Scott White and Al Melchior via Skype in South Florida. How was the three-day weekend, fellas?
It was awesome.
Was that real?
Yes, it is real. I had a great weekend.
Good. And Scott?
The same, Adam.
Okay. I had a great weekend.
How was Valentine's Day with the lady?
It was good. We had a pretty crappy brunch, and then she cooked me a much better dinner. So, all in all, it was good.
The gift of all gifts.
The U2 tickets. She was very excited about that. But, you know, we had Valentine's Day the whole weekend to think about a player that we love in 2015.
Yes.
So we're all going to reveal that. And let's do it right now before we even talk second base. Who wants to go first?
Al can go first.
Yeah, it sounds like I want to go first.
Al, go for it, buddy.
All right. I will say no one player really stood out this year compared to past years. But, all right, I'm going with Corey Dickerson.
I could have called that.
Okay. Yeah,
you love Corey Dickerson.
You know me better than I know
you. You love Corey Dickerson. I can tell the way you talk about him. Yeah. It's like this just
he's a player I love.
Outpouring of your heart.
It is.
I can see it. It comes through Skype, just the look on your face right now talking about Corey Dickerson.
It's all the little hearts that are emanating out from my heart.
And Scott, you're a player you love?
Well, Adam, there are many... many players I'm attracted to, but the one who has my heart this year.
Okay.
See where this goes.
Is Carlos Carrasco.
Hey, all right.
Yeah. Should I talk about my affection or?
Yeah, go in 20 words or less.
20 words or less.
140 characters.
Well, Adam, I'm actually working on my breakouts column right now. So
you
I
got
have
like three
numbers.
Words left, dude.
I have the numbers right here. Last 10 starts, 130 ERA, 0.81 whip, 10.2 strikeouts per 9 innings in his last 10 starts. And his walk rate was like below 2 per 9 during that stretch too. And this is a guy who throws in the high 90s with his fastball. Former top prospect, was the prize of the Cliff Lee deal with the Phillies a few years ago. So it seems like he finally came into his own, and wouldn't it surprise me if he puts up ace numbers all season long this year.
That's love.
Yeah, that is love, and he's RP eligible.
He is. That adds to the love in head-to-head leagues. In fact, that might cause everyone to fall in love with him, and I'm just not willing to work that hard for him, if you know what I mean. Like, I love him. I love him in, like, you know, a seventh, eighth round kind of way, and maybe not a fifth. Sixth round kind of way.
See, that's part of the Corey Dickerson appeal for me is, you know, he's awesome, but, you know, like not everybody's going to be, you know, knocking on his door.
Yeah.
Guys are playing hard to get, I see.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of fish in the sea, Adam.
There sure are. Now, I remember a couple years ago I had Emilio Bonifacio as my player that I love, so we'll forget about that. I don't remember who I had in 2014. But here in 2015, I dropped a hint on last podcast that he's left-handed.
Somebody guessed. Was it on Twitter? Because I think you saw that.
Yeah, somebody guessed.
Right.
Hyunjin Ryu.
Yeah.
That is wrong.
Hyunjin Ryu.
That is wrong.
Oh, it's wrong.
Not correct.
But you love him, Adam.
I do love him, but he's old news. I like a pitcher that I'm taking 8 rounds later. James Paxton.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah, I
heart James Paxton this year.
You do.
Yeah, and I know you guys, you're all into the strikeouts. I think the strikeout rate could go up. The whip was great. The ERA was great. I don't see a reason why he shouldn't have a big year. I'll go guarantee top 30 pitcher, James Paxton.
That's strong. You know, not to make you jealous or anything, but you know what it is I love about James Paxton?
What's that?
I think last year, and I'm saying I think because I'm not 100% sure about this, but I'm like 99% sure. I think he was the pitcher who allowed the lowest proportion of pulled fly balls.
Oh, I know you like that stat. That's Al's new stat.
That
pulled
is.
Fly
it's
balls.
The stat of the week, and Paxton was really good at it last year.
Plus, he was great on aliens.
And there's that.
Yeah.
He was what?
Bill Paxton.
Oh, okay. All right.
Note the date and time. I got a movie joke before you
do. All right. So let's transition to second base, and I'll give out the email address. Oh, that sounded dirty, by the way. Let's transition to our second base preview. Fantasy baseball.
I don't know what happened over the weekend there, but
yeah. Fantasybaseball at cbsi.com is our email address. Fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. We'll do a mailbag show later in the week. We'll do a third base preview later in the week. So mostly just second base. A couple emails about second baseman later on in the show. Before we get into anything here, we're gonna have a little bit of a disagreement. Who's gonna be the number one second baseman in 2015, guys?
Well, obviously it's gonna be Jose Altuve.
Oh, is that right, Scott?
Well, it was by a substantial margin last year. And you know what, Al? You're not Al. You're Adam. You know what, Adam? I hate to throw off your game here, but I actually think if you're asking me who will be the number one second baseman in 2015, I do think Altuve has the best chance. But I would rather draft Cano first because I just don't feel like there's really any downside with Cano. The downside was what he did last year. And he was still, other than the gap between Altuve and Rendon at the top, the gap between him and D. Gordon was the biggest gap among second basemen. That's really where you drew the line between the high-end second baseman and the second tier. So assured high-end production from Cano. Maybe his power bounces back some, maybe not. But I don't think you're going to be disappointed with him, especially early in the second round. You can get him then.
Well, the thing is, like, there was a huge gap between Cano and Altuve. Was that about Altuve overachieving last year? Is he at 341? He had never hit better than 290. Or Cano underachieving, or both? And then we'll throw Rendon in the mix, too, in a second. What was that all about?
Yeah, I think it's more about Altuve overachieving. And, yeah, I'm saying this even though I still predict him to be the top-ranking second baseman. But he's got a lot of room to regress, and he will regress in batting average and get it closer to 300.
Yeah, I think it was a little overachieving for Altuve and a little underachieving for Cano. And maybe when they close the gap, Altuve still comes out ahead. But I just don't really feel like there's anything to worry about with Cano. I mean, it went bad for him last year and he was still awesome. So I'm fine investing a first or second round pick in him.
Well, okay. He was very good. I'm not quite sure I'd say awesome. Maybe just based on where you drafted him, you were thinking he'd be a top five, top six player, and he obviously wasn't. He was the number five second baseman in points, Cano, number six in Roto. And then the question is, will the power come back? Because the batting average was still very good. He had 314, but only 14 home runs. It didn't appear to be a home road thing. His ground ball rate was very high. And if you look at 2013, after the All-Star break, Cano only hit six home runs. So is this just a new hitter who doesn't hit as many fly balls, hit for as much power as he used to?
You know, I don't feel like I can say that definitively, but, you know, you've marshaled the evidence. It has been a while now. The low home run totals are supported by shorter fly ball distances. Like you said, he wasn't really hitting for power on the road, even less so than at Safeco. So all that would suggest that if you're banking on him rebounding, that could be a losing bet. But, look, I think anything's possible here. I totally agree with Scott's assessment that certainly whatever you think of the ceiling, the floor for Cano is probably what you saw last year, and there's nothing wrong with that. But, I don't really like his chances for a rebound either.
Yeah, and if you look at our drafts, our points league draft, our Roto League draft, you'll see Cano, Altuve, and Rendon pretty much going back-to-back-to-back or very close to it within six picks in the middle of the second round. And I would make the case that Rendon should be the first one drafted because he has dual position eligibility. And I know that's not exactly answering the question of who will be the number one second baseman in 2015, but since he is eligible at second and third, I think if push comes to shove, I might want to draft Rendon first of those three. What do you guys think?
Well, he is my top third baseman, so I can understand just the perspective of, okay, he's the first second baseman off the board because he's my third baseman kind of thing.
Is there a difference? Is there a difference in the position, Scott?
Well, third base, they're both kind of odd positions in that if enough things break right, they could be deep. But going in, there's enough risk that I see them both as kind of shallow. Mm-hmm. I think on the high end, third base is a little shallower, but then maybe in the second tier, second base is shallower. So it could go. You could go either way with Rendon, I feel like. I think comparing him to Altuve and Cano, though, And look, to me, that's a well-defined first tier, so we're kind of nitpicking by making distinctions between them. But for me, so much of Rendon's production last year was RBI and runs scored. It was supporting cast base, and it should still be a great supporting cast, but that just always concerns me a little when you can't just trust the player to do his thing and all the numbers to turn out the way they're supposed to. And I know Al's a little skeptical of him repeating the home run total, too. Not that I think he'll drop below 15 home runs or anything, but maybe I could see him falling short of 20 and maybe ending up more like a third-round second baseman than a second-round second baseman. But, you know, that's kind of nitpicking when you're making those small distinctions.
Scott, I'm glad you brought up the runs scored. Rendon scored 111 runs, and Altuve scored 85. And Altuve did that with a 377 on-base percentage, which was a lot better than Rendon's. So I think, guys, if the Astros lineup gets better, which it should, we could see Altuve score a lot more than the 85 runs, considering he did lead the league in hits last year, didn't he?
Yeah, and I'm pretty much counting on him scoring more runs, and that is going to offset some of the value that he'll lose when the batting average comes back to earth a little bit.
Right. All right, well, I asked you guys before the show to look at the points draft and the roto draft and pick a pick you liked involving a second baseman and a pick you didn't like. So, Al, give me a second base draft pick that you liked in one of our drafts that we've done so far, 12-team leagues.
Okay. And these two picks that I picked out are related. So the one that I like was from the roto draft with Jason Kipnis going in the seventh round. I think that's pretty good value, and I really like his chances for a bounce back season. And if he gets close to where he was before, then he will probably return the value of like a fourth round pick.
Okay, and who don't you like?
The next second baseman who went in that same draft, Howie Kendrick, who I do like a lot better than Scott does, but I have him a lot higher in the rankings. But after the top seven, and Kipnis is my seventh, it gets very bunchy. And it's nobody that I'm, with one exception that I'm sure will come up later, nobody that I'm really that interested in. So I think there should be more than a one-round gap between Kipnis and Kendrick. Didn't really care for Kendrick in round eight.
Scott, like and a dislike.
My like is actually in a name you wouldn't expect at a very late stage of the draft, the head-to-head draft we did, Chase Utley in round 19. You know, just ahead of Rougned Odor, going in the same range as Michael Morse and Oswaldo Arcia in a head-to-head points league, which is his format because, you know, he's great at the peripherals. He was actually the seventh best second baseman in that format, and that was with some of the worst percentage stats of his career. And maybe that's part of the regression at age 36. Maybe he's not going to be able to turn those percentages around, but still, seventh best second baseman. And, you know, on a per game basis, at least you can always trust him. I think if I missed out on all the second baseman early on, cause I was focused on other positions and wound up with him in round 19 in a head to head points league, I'd be feeling pretty good about it.
I must bring up though that Chase Utley in his last 41 games hit .215 with a .287 on base and a .295 slugging percent, .295 slugging
That's
percentage
that.
With
How
no
many
home
games
runs.
Is that?
41 games.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
I think, you know, look, in that format, Scott, if you get Chase Utley and he's good for half the season and then he becomes old, plays like a 36-year-old, and then you have to drop him and you pick someone else up, you probably, you know, as long as you got good production for half the season,
yeah,
you probably take it, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I'll take it. And I'm not... That is a good stat you brought up, but 41 games isn't going to be a deal breaker for me. You know, 82 games would be maybe a deal breaker for me. But yeah, that is, he's definitely on the decline at age 36. It's just, I think people are too quick to just say he's washed up and can't do anything for you because clearly he did a lot for owners last year.
So would you rather have Utley or, Odor?
I'd rather have Utley. I mean, I like Odor as a breakout candidate this year, but if you're talking about spending the same amount on them, I'll take the surer thing in Utley.
Al?
Me too.
Okay.
Yep.
And Scott, what pick didn't you like?
I didn't like That same draft, head-to-head points league. Somebody took Brian Dozier in round three.
Hey! Hey, you take it easy.
Three, I think, too. I think the third pick in round three.
Yeah.
And it's kind of nitpicky because I think if you look at my top 300, if he's not a late round three pick, he's an early round four pick. That's where it gets tricky at second base after the three elite guys go off the board at the top, because Dozier, he performed closer to them than the next tier, but so the season was so front loaded for him that I'm not entirely trusting of him to repeat it, especially the home run total. So I actually tier him with the lower group, which includes guys like Kipnis, who was going in round seven or whatever, who last year I was drafting him in the second round, so clearly he has a lot of potential himself. I think I'd rather be focused on other positions at that early stage of the draft for a guy who, while I do think Dozier is a pretty good player, I'm just skeptical of him repeating last year's numbers.
All right, that's it. I have to say, I have to use my excuse now for that pick. Okay, because I didn't say it. I think the last time we talked about this pick, I don't think I brought up my excuse. And it's a totally valid excuse. I was in a meeting with our boss when we were drafting, and I wasn't really concentrating. And I should have taken Yasiel Puig. Puig was on the board. I took Dozier instead. So I agree, there were better players available. But my thought on Dozier was, I guess, yeah, kind of what you were talking about. I sort of put him in the tier ahead. Maybe I shouldn't have. And I thought there was a big drop-off after Dozier at second base. So I did want him on my team. Maybe third round was a little bit too early. But I wasn't going to get him in the fourth round, toward the end of the fourth round when I was picking. But okay, fine. Works for me. He's an interesting player. He hit 23 home runs, scored 112 runs, and had 21 steals. Only hit 242. He was actually better than Robinson Cano in both formats. Cano was fifth and sixth in points in Roto. Dozier was third and fifth. Al, what do you think about Dozier this year?
Yeah, I think he can come close to repeating what he did last year. And yeah, it was a front-loaded performance. But over the last couple of years, we've seen a lot of power from him for the position. So, and he's produced despite not having a high batting average. So it's not like you're going to see regression in that category.
Right. So let's talk about second base and your strategy. So would you define it as a deep position or a shallow position, guys?
I think it's pretty shallow. In fact, the only one I really see as shallower is shortstop, particularly at the top. And as I mentioned before, with the Kendrick versus Kipnis picks, I think there's an enormous drop off past the top seven. Top seven are all pretty solid, but then it's a big drop off. And only shortstop where really I feel like there's a big drop off after about the top four. It's really unparalleled in terms of the fall off from the top guys.
Yeah, I'm not as down on second base. It was the second best position last year, but I don't think it's as good as then. And like I was saying earlier, there's just a lot of question marks from guys like Pedroia and Kipnis and Zobrist to some extent who can make it go one way or the other. The thing I like about second base is there's so many sleepers and breakout candidates here. Young guys who either haven't shown much in the big leagues yet, like Javier Baez and
Odor,
Marcus Semien,
right?
Or guys who looked like they were on the verge of something last year, like Wong, and I'd put Rougned Odor in that category too. And that's not even including Jed Jerko, Arizmendi Alcantara, Scooter Gennett. I know Al likes him a lot. I don't think the ceiling is especially high, but I think he could be startable. So I feel like if you mess up and just like ignore the position early on, it's not like you're just choosing between a bunch of scrubs at the end like it's shortstop. I like the fallback options available here.
So Al, your top seven would be in some order: Altuve, Cano, Rendon, Dozier, Kinsler, Kipnis, and what am I? D. Gordon, is that what I'm forgetting?
D. Gordon, yep.
Okay. Are you going to make an attempt to get one of those seven? Or do you feel... Yeah, go ahead.
Yes, most likely not. You never know how a draft is going to develop. I do like each of those top seven. I just don't see any of them. I'm hoping maybe Cano, but I'm not hopeful that is his value, perceived value, is going to fall that much. I just don't see being willing to pay what I think those guys are going to require. So my strategy this year is really a four-letter word. It's just Wong. Because I really like him. This is the guy I was referring to before, outside the top seven, who I think has the upside maybe to get with the, in that group. But he's obviously very unproven. Last season was really a grab bag of, you saw a different type of player in the first half than the second half. So he's risky, but given that, I think the top seven are all going to be a little too pricey. That's Wong is the guy I'm going to be targeting probably in a lot of drafts.
And how about you, Scott? Do you think the top seven are going to be too pricey, or do you think there will be good value?
Oh, I'd love to get one of the top three, that top tier. It just really depends on where you draft. I think if you pick in the back half of the first round, so that would mean the front half of the second round, there's a very good chance you could end up with them, and I'd be happy to do it then because I do think there is a significant drop-off thereafter. But otherwise, it's just about finding the right value. Like I said, that second tier, the way I drew it up, it runs several rounds long so that you could potentially get a Kipnis or maybe D. Gordon, better chance of that in a head-to-head league than a roto league, at a good value. But otherwise, if I missed out on both of those top two tiers and was forced to settle for somebody like Utley or Wong or some of the guys I mentioned earlier, even somebody like Neil Walker, he seems to be pretty affordable for a guy who tied with Dozier for the home run lead at the position last year. Mm-hmm. I don't think you're screwed if you miss out on the top seven.
All right, how does your strategy change in a roto league where there's a middle infield spot? So, in a points league where you're only drafting one second baseman, it might be one thing in your strategy, but how about in a roto league where you might need two second basemen, maybe your middle infielder is going to be a shortstop, but does anything change?
For me, probably not much, but I'd be a little bit more motivated to go after D. Gordon, partly because that's the format he excels in, and partly because I may want to target one of the lower end but higher upside guys as the middle infielder. Scott mentioned Jeanette is one example. Kipnis, too. What I said before, they're all too pricey. I have some hope that people are going to be bummed out enough with Kipnis that he'll fall. So I could see being a little more motivated to pick up Kipnis or Gordon.
What round do you guys think would be good value for Kipnis? He's sitting there in round what? And you're like, oh, okay, now I'll take him.
Well, that was the experience I had in our roto mock when I took him.
Seventh.
Let's see, fifth pick in round seven.
Mm-hmm.
So, but you know how I drafted. To me, it's more about the tiers. And I think it was clear at that point he was the last of that second tier remaining.
But is round five too early?
Round five?
Yeah.
If there was a run on second base, Erpman early, and he was the last from that second tier, yeah, I kind of feel like there would be enough more attractive things available to other positions
right. That
I'd probably pass him up then.
Okay, 12-team Roto League, $260 budget. How much should your number one second baseman go for? Cano, Altuve, whoever.
Altuve is my top guy. I've got him priced at 33. I don't think I'd go much above 35 for him. I know I've said with some of the other positions that I'd go maybe an extra five for the top guy or two. But Altuve does have enough sort of uncertainty in terms of what you'll get this season. I don't think I'd go too far above my price value.
Yeah, this is how close I have that top tier. Cano 30, Altuve 30, Rendon 29. So... I never hold that strictly to my auction values. Maybe once it gets to 33, 34, I might start backing down. But because I feel like that tier stands out from the second tier, I could see that, and because I have three options there to choose from, I could see that being a tier where I, in an auction and you have complete control over things, that I do go the extra dollar just to make sure I secure one of those three.
So how does the position change in AL-only leagues or NL-only leagues? Is there a big difference?
Oh, yeah, this one changes big time. Rendon is going to go for a going to fetch a pretty penny in NL only leagues because it's him. In my rankings, he's the number one in NL leagues, followed by D. Gordon and Daniel Murphy.
Wow, yeah. So, big
now,
difference.
All the pretty much all the sleeper breakout guys, except for Jerko, or not sorry, except for Odor, are in the NL, but you're having to buy them at prices that assume they've already turned that corner. So that's kind of scary.
Which second baseman have different values depending on points or roto format? I think D. Gordon is a great example, right?
That's the obvious one. And then the guy Scott just mentioned going the other direction, having higher value in a points league, would be Daniel Murphy.
Yeah.
I am not interested in drafting Daniel Murphy, fellas. He's just so blah.
Yeah, he is. No argument there, but a little more appeal in a points league. That's as
finished,
much as I can say.
What was he last year? He was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
He was 11th in points and 9th in roto.
Yeah, well, there you go. That's blah. That's, when you're settling for number 11 or 12 at a position. And even though he was higher than that 2 years ago, I don't really see him as having a lot of upside. I think that might have been an uncharacteristic year.
Right. Now, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I mentioned Utley before. He was a guy, there was a stark contrast in his head-to-head in roto value. Because he excels at the peripherals, it boosted his head-to-head value. But it was a especially bad year for him in terms of home runs. Maybe that's because he's 36, but maybe he bounces back a little. Dustin Pedroia, I don't count on him for home runs anymore. Another guy who's great at the peripherals, so he's a fine starter in head-to-head leagues, but he's on a three-year power decline here, or it may actually be 4 years. So it's not looking good for him bouncing back there. So I think of Pedroia as strictly a head-to-head guy.
Are there any second basemen that may help you specifically in OBP or hurt you in on-base percentage?
Well, the ones that hurt you, the ones that are coming to my mind more quickly here. So
Kinsler didn't walk
at all last year. Wong, who I do like, if it's an OBP league, he's going to be docked a little bit in terms of value because he hasn't walked much in his minor and major league career. And I guess if you're going a little bit deeper, Brandon Phillips, he's probably not going to help you much anywhere, but he's especially not going to help you in OBP.
All right, then let's get to the fun stuff, sleepers, breakouts, busts, then we'll go over the draft results. Blank is my favorite sleeper second baseman.
Wong.
My favorite sleeper is Marcus Semien, who's a little further down the list, and I could call him my favorite sleeper for third base, too, because he's going to be eligible at both positions. And guess what? They plan on him playing shortstop, so that's going to raise his value even more. It's a 2020 guy in the minors who walked a bunch. The walks haven't really translated to the majors so far. Struck out a bunch. But he's going to get his best chance ever this year because he's the guy. And Billy Bean likes him, so this is where he gets to prove whether or not he's a legitimate starter in the big leagues or just more of a quadruple A type. I think for a late round pick, I'm willing to gamble with Billy Bean on him capitalizing on his minor league performance.
Is this where we get to do the "you're such a Billy Bean apologist" thing?
I'd like to see you do better than Mr. Bean there in Oakland, buddy. Put you in charge of a team and see what you can do.
I'm just saying, we thought the Donaldson trade was terrible, right?
Sure.
So, you said it to Al on one of our previous podcasts. You did the whole "you're such a Billy Bean apologist" voice. So I thought, bring it in everyone. How about a breakout, guys? Blank is my favorite breakout second baseman.
All right. Well, that's where I'm going to talk about Screw Jeanette, but can I just back up rewind the podcast a little bit? Because I keep talking about how much I like Colton Wong. I don't think I've really said why. And in a way, even though he hasn't been around that long in the majors, he sort of has that breakout look of somebody who in the minors had really good contact skills, hit for a pretty high average. But you thought that the weak link was going to be power. And then we saw a lot of power over the last 3 months of the season, then of course again in the postseason. Mm-hmm. So I think the power is legitimate, And I think the potential is there for him to raise the batting average quite a bit. So you put those things together, toss in the 20 steals that he's shown that he can give you. And that's why I think that he could elevate himself to, you know, top 7 or 8 status.
Well, okay, but let me ask you this just kind of philosophically about baseball players. We were having a similar conversation about someone, and I wish I remembered who. Someone who had hit a lot of home runs when in the past they were more of a contact guy. And I just feel like there are maybe some guys that you're either going to get one or the other, but you're not going to get both. You know, like if Wong is going to hit for more power, maybe he's not going to be a good average guy. And look, yeah. And that doesn't mean he can't be a good fantasy option. Like, look at Brian Dozier, especially since Wong has good speed. He stole 20 bases in 24 attempts. So just generally speaking, like when you see a guy who had been a really good average guy and then all of a sudden the power came and the batting average went down, does that mean to you like he's making a choice to be more of a home run hitter and let the average suffer?
Yeah, no, I think that's right. And you know, but I don't rule out the possibility that you know, he could strike out even less. But yeah, when you hit more fly balls, generally when they don't go out, you are going to get fewer hits on the remaining balls in play. So no, there's definitely something to that. But what I like about Wong is that when I projected him out, I was pretty conservative on the batting average and went with 260. And even that would make him, among the projections, that would make him the ninth most valuable second baseman.
How many home runs did you give him?
So if he, you know, strikes out less often or does manage to get more hits on balls in play, then he stands to rank even higher.
How many homers are you thinking for Colton Wong?
Yeah, I gave him 16 homers, 25 steals. So those, you could see those maybe being lower. But I don't think they're outrageously high either.
I'd take the over on them, actually.
Yeah. The homers, I certainly would.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe not the steals, but the home runs, yeah.
Okay. Sorry, we'll get to Scott's breakout in a second. Al, you wanted to talk about Scooter Gennett?
Yeah. And, you know, I realized in including him in the breakouts column that I just wrote, and also when I wrote a Brewers Outlook a few weeks back, I wrote about him there, too. And I came to the realization he's kind of Matt Carpenter who doesn't walk. It would be better to, you know, have an actual Matt Carpenter who does walk. But Jeanette's going to come a lot cheaper. And, of course, Carpenter's also not second base eligible anymore. But the guy's already showed he's got very good doubles power. And he's never really hit for home runs. But he's still, I think he's 24, Jeanette. He could be one of those surprise doubles turn into homers kind of guys. Who's going to hit 300, and I think a worst case scenario is going to give you a good number of doubles. So at this position, that's not bad.
Scott, breakout.
Well, my favorite breakout, and Al classified him as a sleeper. It's one of those things where you could go either way. Would be Wong, but we've talked about him enough. So I'll go Rougned Odor here, and it's a case of a guy. The clear case of a guy rushed to the big leagues at age 20 because they had a need to fill with Jerickson Profar not healing, not recovering in time to begin the season, or really contribute at all last season, it turned out. So Odor came up after barely getting any time above Class A, and he struggled. But this was a guy who showed five-category potential in the minors, and over his final 103 at-bats, 291, 4 home runs, 2 steals, and an 832 OPS. Seems like he started to figure things out. And going into this season, the Rangers, you know, Jerickson Profar is there. He's supposedly healthy now after all those shoulder troubles last year, though he never had surgery, so that remains to be seen. It looks like it's Odor's job, and I think... their GM, John Daniels, has pretty much already said they plan for Profar to begin in the minors. So unless Odor falls flat on his face, I don't really worry about there being much of a battle there. So it's Odor's job, and if he picks up where he left off last year, he could start to show some of that five-category potential in the majors. I'm not sure he's going to be all the way there because now he's only 21, so still a long way from his prime. But we've seen players make an impact that young before.
Let's talk about how you guys might draft someone like Odor or Gennett. So in a 12-team league where you only have to start one second baseman, you're not going to draft these guys as starters, most likely, right?
Right.
Okay. Yep. So maybe you draft them if you didn't get one of those top seven and your starting second baseman is Pedroia or Neil Walker or something like that. Maybe that's when you take a late round pick on a high upside guy. And then in a roto league, I think it's easy. You say, all right, I need a middle infielder now for a dollar or late in the draft. I'll take Odor, I'll take Jeanette, something like that. But do you kind of agree with that premise of the scenario by which you would draft one of those guys?
I mean, it's a scenario. It's one that makes a lot of sense. But, you know, I just think that they're pretty good options in a roto league for your middle infield slot.
Sure.
I think, you've waited for them to be your second base starter, that you've waited too long. But, you know, your scenario makes perfect sense.
Yeah, but if I drafted a second baseman that I love, I'm probably not drafting another second baseman, unless it's a pretty deep league.
Probably not.
I think there's value, though.
But I noticed in our first head-to-head mock, the way the starting pitcher breaks down this year, where it's so easy to get, and to me, it's more of a priority to get a handful of aces. There's less need, at least going into the year, for starting pitcher depth than there used to be. And remember, the way we're talking about Odor now is the way we're talking about Anthony Rendon at this time last year. He was that guy who, well, maybe you take him as a spare second baseman in the end just in case your starter doesn't pan out. And look what happens. So if you feel like there's going to be more of a need for hitters than pitchers over the course of the season, then maybe it makes sense to stock your bench with some of these high upside hitters who will just either straight up overtake your starter or become good enough that you can either trade your starter or trade the player himself for whatever else you need.
All right, so I want to get into the draft results, but just really quickly, in 20 seconds, give me a bust second base, and then we can talk about it more later.
I'll go Javier Baez here. Not that I think he will necessarily bust, but I feel like he's got probably more bust potential than any of the, guys I've got in the, say, top 15 or so. I just think he could be just a complete washout who still strikes out way too much and gets sent to the minors. The Cubs have built such infield depth that they don't have to run him out there if he's struggling. So I think he could be great, but yeah. I think he's got more bust potential than just about anybody at the position.
I'll go Ian Kinsler here, who we haven't talked about, even though he's pretty high end. And he was better away from Texas last year than I thought he was going to be. But his on-base percentage was still a career low. It continued a trend of the OPS falling year after year. And he's kind of like Rendon in that a lot of his production was his supporting cast. Also like Rendon, that supporting cast should still be great.
Mm-hmm.
But there's talk of him too changing his swing, so it's not going to have this natural uppercut he's been using forever. So how much will that cut into his home runs? It's just, when a guy stinks and he talks about changing his swing, it can only be a good thing. But when a guy is good but teetering on not being good the way Kinsler has been the last few years, to me that's very scary. And for the price you'd have to pay for him, I'd just rather not.
Yeah, Kinsler kind of confused me. I tried to do some research on him because he finished as the number four second baseman in both points and roto last year. And he finishes top six pretty much every year. And he slugged .423 or less in four of the last five seasons. And that's terrible. So how does he do it? He stays healthy. That's a big thing. But if you can get replaced.
He hasn't always.
Yeah.
Last year was kind of exceptional as far as that goes.
He gets a lot of at bats. Maybe, he's always hitting at the top of the order. I don't know. I feel like on a per plate appearance basis, he's not as good as how he usually finishes. Certainly wasn't last year.
Yeah, not on a per plate appearance basis. And actually, looking at his game, his year by year stats here, three of the last 4 years he's been very healthy.
Right.
I guess he had more injury problems earlier in his career.
Yeah, no, because I was confused. I was surprised. I was like, oh, he's been healthier than I thought. All right, so let's get to the draft results. We'll do the Roto League since more middle infielders are taken and start. Again, Altuve, Cano, Rendon, they went 15th, 16th, and 18th overall, right in the middle of the second round. I think we've talked about that. We feel good about that. Brian Dozier went in the middle of round four. Scott, you didn't like him in round three. You cool with Dozier in round four?
Yeah, I think that's appropriate. Again, I'd rather not be the guy to take him, but there's a lot of hitters I reluctantly take in round four.
D. Gordon is the first pick of round seven. So a lot of time goes off 2.5 rounds before another second baseman after Dozier. Gordon's the first pick of round seven. I want to give out Gordon's numbers after the All-Star break. He did bat .284, Al, but he had 4 walks and 47 strikeouts. He stole 21 bases in 31 attempts. The percentages were down for him after the All-Star break. Are we worried about regression from D. Gordon, who was the third best second baseman in Roto last year, 6th best in points?
A little bit, and I don't feel good about saying that, because going into last year, I always thought that he got sort of got snubbed in drafts, because I thought he had that potential to hit 300 and steal a bunch of bases, and then he realized it. Mm-hmm. But there's enough inconsistency there that, sure, I do worry about some regression for him.
Okay. The first pick of round seven seemed good to you. He actually went in round 10 in points.
I think both of those are good value. He's not he's no slouch in points. He was just after Cano. Now, that was the big drop-off I talked about from Cano to Gordon last year. But, round 10, I still think for what was it, the sixth second baseman, still good value.
Yeah, sixth best in points. After D. Gordon, at the first pick of round seven, we get Ian Kinsler with the second pick of round seven. Who would you guys rather have in a Roto League, Kinsler or Gordon?
I'd rather have Gordon.
Well, I'd rather have Kinsler, but for the difference in price. Oh, they went in the same round. Look at that. No, I'd rather have Kinsler then.
In Roto, they did. In points, yeah. Kinsler went a lot earlier.
Yeah.
He went about 3.5 rounds earlier in the points format. And then right after Kinsler went, it was Kipnis. So you got Gordon, Kinsler, Kipnis in round seven. And then we get that pick that Al didn't like, Howie Kendrick in round eight. What didn't you like about that? He's just kind of whatever?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, what I do like about him is he's extremely consistent for batting average. And he makes contact. He's got a crazy low number of pop-outs every season, which might sound like it's not particularly relevant, but it's what allows him to hit for as high an average as he does. Nothing really distinguishes him from some of the other second basemen that are coming up in the pack.
He hits about .290 every year, so I guess if you he's not going to go that early in a lot of drafts. If you need batting average late, maybe you look at Howie Kendrick. Colton Wong, middle of round 8. Neil Walker, round 10. Ben Zobrist, round 10. Dustin Pedroia, round 11. So we get Wong, Walker, Zobrist, Pedroia. Any thoughts, guys?
Well, the Wong pick relative to those others, and maybe it's just my perception is off. I would have expected Wong to go after that group. But I don't know that, particularly in a Roto League where he's probably going to stand out more in home runs and steals, I don't know that it's wrong to take him there.
What about Pedroia? You know, a couple years ago, he was, I think, a top 3 second baseman, and he did that with an injury all year. And then, of course, he was injured again all last year and didn't play very well. Now, he played. He just played hurt. 278 yeah. With 7 home runs. What do you think about Pedroia, who failed to be a top 12 second baseman last season?
I mean, there's nothing wrong with that value at all. And yet, I think if that's my pick, I'm just still not excited about it. Maybe I should be more excited. But at that point, realistically, I'm passing him by and taking the flyer on Marcus Semien.
Look, I don't know if it's one of those situations where I just got burned by him, so I don't trust him anymore. I don't feel like I usually kind of have that vengeful approach to players, but I was all about Pedroia bouncing back last year. I was saying he was still a third rounder or whatever, and then he took another step back. Now, he was battling a wrist injury, fine, but that's 2 years in a row now where he's playing through some injury. I just don't know that, and now he's what, 31 32, maybe that's going to be the norm for him. I'm not counting on him bouncing back in terms of power.
You know, it's funny, it's like you kind of think of Pedroia as old. And he's younger than Robinson Cano.
Yeah. Yep.
But Cano is just such a great athlete, and Pedroia is one of those guys that it felt like he had to exert every ounce of energy in his body to be as good as he's been. And maybe that's a factor now. So if, I know you guys like Wong's upside, but if we look at Walker, Zobrist, and Pedroia, as we're now 12 deep at second base in this draft, Walker, Zobrist, Pedroia, which one of those three do you think has the best chance to perform like a top five second baseman?
I think Walker, actually. But I don't think it's a great chance.
Yeah. I'm going with Pedroia there just because of who he's been. Walker, I feel like last year was the full extent of his potential, and it wasn't top five good.
Javier Baez goes in round 12, followed by Daniel Murphy, Marcus Semien. Baez, Murphy, Semien in rounds 12 and 13. Any thoughts on that trio?
Well, like I said, once Wong's off the board, and Wong did go much earlier than I anticipated here, I've got my sights set on Semien, and I'm filling other needs.
I think you took Semien here at 13, so and I was like, I remember I was like irritated by it because I was like, man, that's Simeon's supposed to be like my late round super sneaky middle infielder pick, and here's Al taking him in round 13. I think you said you weren't like thrilled with the where you took him either. You just kind of
Because my thought was I was probably going to get Wong closer to there, not as late as 13, but maybe like 11. And at that point, I was maybe scrambling a bit, but I like the upside so much better than anybody else that follows, even including Odor. So, earlier than I would have liked, but that was who I wanted. It was late enough. I didn't feel like I was sacrificing too much.
Let's go a little bit deeper then. Chase Utley, first pick of round 15, as Drubal Cabrera in round 17. And he'll be obviously shortstop eligible as well, right?
Yes.
Jed Jerko in round 17. Rougned Odor in round 20, Brandon Phillips, Scooter Gennett, Martin Prado. How about Jed Jerko, guys? Could he finally put it together this year and, mash his way into the top 10 maybe at second base?
I think he could. It's not so high percentage that I'm targeting him in the same way that I'm targeting Semien. But, he's done it actually more. He's probably proven more than Semien has. He's had more opportunity to do it. So sure. No, I think he can be a big power guy. I'm not sure what else we'll get from Jerko.
Would you guys rather have Jerko or Rougned Odor?
I'd rather have Odor, I think, but that's me saying that, noticing that I have Jerko one spot ahead of Odor in my rankings. So, maybe I need to adjust my rankings.
But you'd be more excited about drafting Odor.
I would, yeah.
Gotcha. And then Prado, Phillips, are there any other deeper second basemen that might give some good late round value?
Well, let's see. Somebody we haven't touched on yet.
You did offhandedly mention Alcantara.
Yeah.
He doesn't have a job, and I don't know that that's a problem because Joe Maddon's his manager now, and he changes the lineups every game, so
he can play anywhere.
Yeah,
it'll be like the new Zobrist for Madden, except completely different skill set. There's some pretty good upside there, and I would be keeping an eye on Jerkson Profar, even though I think Odor's job is safe. He's so young, you just never know, and Profar can play shortstop too. So, maybe there's a scenario where he proves his health and, they start playing somebody at DH until they find a way to unload Elvis Andrews or whatever else. Obviously, Profar, at this time, 2 years ago, he was the number one prospect in all of baseball. So tons of upside there still.
So are there any AL-only or NL-only guys other than Profar that, could be very sneaky picks? They might get at bats later on in the year. Any prospects to consider?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I like Devin Travis for the Blue Jays. It's possible he wins a job in spring training, but their main alternative right now, I think, is Mycerese Turris, so that's not much of an alternative. And they gave up Anthony Ghost to get him from the Tigers this offseason, so clearly they have plans for Mr. Travis. Now, he's not a guy who's going to wow you in any one category, but he's kind of, I guess, maybe a poor man's Mookie Betts. I don't know if that's raising the bar too high. And now we think of Mookie Betts as an outfielder, so maybe it's not even the best comparison. But a guy who's going to make a lot of contact, probably hit double-digit home runs, I think with some steals. So, yeah, I'd be keeping an eye on him in AL-only leagues. In NL-only leagues, I would be watching out for Jose Peraza of the Braves. Now, he might come up a little later. I don't think at age 20 they're going to give him the job in spring training, but the only one blocking him in the majors is Alberto Collazo, and the Braves are obviously in rebuild mode. He's exciting as a non-power hitter could be, because he should hit for a very high average, steal a lot of bases. I think of it as a Jose Altuve-like skill set, though obviously calling 20-year-old who doesn't walk, comparing him to a borderline first rounder is probably reckless, and I shouldn't do it. But you know, in an NL-only league, that's reason to throw a dollar at him.
What about the White Sox? What are they doing at second base?
Yeah, they're kind of playing 52 pickup there. You've got Micah Johnson,
who steals a lot of bases himself.
Yeah,
right.
So he's another deep leaguer. And every time I mention this guy, I'm never sure I have the name right. Carlos Sanchez. So Scott, please correct me.
Well, he's such a forgettable player.
Yeah.
He's the guy who was starting for them down the stretch instead of Semien for some weird reason. But he seems to have no offensive upside whatsoever.
So, yeah, but Gordon Beckham apparently is not really in the mix there for a starting job.
Well, Micah Johnson was the name I wanted to get there.
Well, you got it.
Yeah.
Fishing for names, Adam.
I couldn't remember it. I thought it was Micah Johnson, but I didn't want to make an idiot of myself, so I let Al take that one for me. So thanks, buddy. I got a couple of emails here to finish the show. We've actually answered these questions, but we'll answer them again just to give some names. Bob Cobb from New York, New York. Says, dear Mr. Wilhelm, Mr. Pitt, and Mr. Lippman. Is that a Seinfeld thing that I'm missing?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Elaine's bosses.
I don't remember anyone other than Mr. Pitt.
You don't remember?
For real?
No.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I don't know.
Which one or two second basemen outside your top 10 can jump into the top 10 this season? Colton Wong and?
You know what? I'm still thinking about the names. They're not all Elaine's bosses, because Mr. Wilhelm's was George's.
That's right.
George.
Yeah. But I don't know, Mr. Lippman. You're right.
Well, take that.
I do think it was one of Elaine's bosses, but yeah, I'm not sure. Anyway, sorry. Back to the question.
Pendant Publishing?
Maybe. Look it up, Al.
All right. So.
So one or two second basemen outside of the top 10 who can jump into the top 10. Oh, gosh.
Baez,
there's a bunch.
Semien.
Wong. Odor, okay. I would say.
We're good there.
Yeah.
And then Newt Joseph from Yazoo City, Missouri says, dear Lem, Dutch, and Danny, that would be the Shield. Pedroia was a bust for my team last season. Which second baseman are likely to be overpriced given production expected? 1 point, it's a head-to-head points league, 1 point per steal, and minus 2 points for an error.
I actually think Rendon might go for too much, and I still think he's my number two guy, definitely in the conversation to be the number one guy, but I think that he could be perceived by enough owners in your leagues to be the top guy that...
I feel like every year we don't pay enough attention to position eligibility and being able to put him at second or third. It could mean absolutely nothing to your team, or it could be huge. Your third baseman, let's say you have Beltre or something, and he gets hurt. Oh, okay. Well, now I can look at two player pools to pick up off free agency because I can move Rendon over to third. I think that's underrated.
The deeper the league, the more important it is.
Sure.
And I think the fact that Rendon plays two fairly weak positions helps your point there. But I'm going to say, I obviously pick Kinsler as a bust. But I think just because there's probably not many people making up rankings for this particular format, 1 point per stolen base, that really, really hurts Altuve's value. And it completely crushes D. Gordon's value. I would think D. Gordon should maybe not even be drafted in this league.
Ooh, all right. Well, thank you guys very much. We'll do third base and a mailbag show later this week when I'll be in Florida to hang out with you. That's Al Melchior and Scott White. I'm Adam Azer. Thanks so much for listening to the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast on CBSSports.com. We'll talk to you next time.